the deliberations. Maybe first we're going to ask the members to introduce themselves.
Right. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Sanibonani Gamuzakele Mbele, member of the committee.
Good morning. This is Nelivan Mabija, member of the committee.
Goedemorgen,
ik ben Pieter Groenewald en ik is ook een lid van die committee.
Morning, my name is Pindile Mola, a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. General Skiri, your delegation.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Chairperson and honorable members. Today, I'm Stefan Skitter. I'm the DNC for Asset and Legal Management. To my left hand side, I have Lieutenant General Shezik, the Divisional Commissioner, Technology Management Services. To her left, we have General Mokwena, the Divisional Commissioner, Supply Chain Management. And to his left, we've got General Matitsa, the Component Head for Facilities Management. These are the four people that will deal with the presentations today. From the far left, General Matitsa and General Mokwena will deal with the facilities management and procurement. General Shezi will deal with the permit presentation. And myself will be in between all of these matters. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, Honorable Groenewald, if you can just maybe your microphone. Thank you. Then I'll ask the delegation of Pop Crew to introduce themselves and then the delegation from SAPU. You're welcome.
Morning, Chairperson. I am Nati Teledi, General Secretary of Pop Crew. With me is the Deputy President, Nati Mabita. And at the back is Thulani Ntsele, the National Treasurer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Then we will ask the delegation from SAPU to introduce themselves. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Mpo, the President of the South African Policing Union. With me is the Deputy, is the GS Oscar Skomere, the Deputy GS Magagula, and the first Vice President Tandem Kizi.
Thank you very much. Maybe just again to contextualize today's meeting. The extent of the supply chain management in SAPS is vast due to the size of the department. As we've indicated yesterday in the budget debate, SAPS is the largest government department in South Africa in terms of employment and the second largest in terms of its budget. With a budget of 87 billion, it's only second to the Department of Social Development. And there is a lot of items in the in this environment in terms of procurement and the management of it, and there's also been a lot of challenges over the years and contracts that members know very well. So the purpose also this morning is to get a sense of where we are, what are we doing to improve the matters, and how are we implementing also the NDP issues and also the recommendations of the Portfolio Committee. I also want to bring on the attention of SAPS in terms of the recommendations we made yesterday. There's also still issues outstanding from previous interactions that they will have to move on quite quickly to provide to the committee to ensure that we can also scrutinize these matters. So let's give the opportunity to SAPS to deal with the issue of supply chain management. Thank you.
Chair, do you want us to start with the procurement side or the facility side?
Procurement.
Procurement side. Okay, General Mokwena, our Divisional Commissioner Supply Chain Management, will now deal with that presentation. Kevin, please.
Just do a microphone, please. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Like DNC Skete has indicated, I'm Lieutenant General Mokwena, Head of Supply Chain Management. Now, the presentation will consist of the following. That will be the introduction, organigram, procurement and contract management, which will consist of procurement legislation and prescripts, procurement delegations, procurement transparency in the subs, establishment of contracts.
Just a moment, sorry, General. Honourable Bailey.
Thank you, Chair. I'm sorry to interrupt the General. I can see my colleagues are a bit confused about where this is. This one is in the middle of the pack on Palmet. If you just go to the middle of the Palmet pit pack.
Yeah, thank you. I think also the presentation was made available by email a day or two ago. So, yeah, you can go in, General. Thank you.
Thank you. ICT procurement, building projects, risk and risk mitigation, communication with provincial and divisional procurement practitioners, irregular expenditure, and the procurement process governance management office, which strictly deals with irregular expenditure. Achievements during 2016 and 17 financial year. Now, under the introduction, basically the procurement of goods, works, and services is done through quotation or bidding processes which must be within the threshold values as determined by National Treasury. As I go on with my presentation, you will notice the different threshold values that are put in place by National Treasury. Now the organigram, on top there is the Divisional Commissioner Supply Chain Management, and then I have the component heads, which consists of procurement, one of them, and the procurement will consist of procurement management, which is handling movable government property. The other one is procurement that handles facility management, and we have finally the procurement management that handles contracts. Now, procurement and contract management consists of the following: procurement management, that is facilities, which handles procurement of buildings, related commodities, and related services for the South African Police Service. Procurement management of MGP, that is government movable property and services, will handle or handles procurement of all movable items and services such as ICT, vehicles, diverse items, professional services, diverse and forensic science laboratory procurement, clothing, radio, stationery, and so on. Procurement management contracts administer and manage contracts after tender awards, which amongst others to be shown on all procurement actions in the subs are governed by legislation and precepts, which includes amongst others the following. This is now the legislation that governs the entire procurement process or the procurement department in the police. That is section 217 of our constitution, the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act, Act No. 5 of 2000, Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment, Act No. 53 of 2003, Public Financial Management, Act No. 1 of 1999, State Information Technology Agency, that is CETA, Act No. 88 of 1998. Treasury, National Treasury Instruction Notes or Practice Notes and Circulars. We normally refer them as practice notes. Pardon me, not instruction notes, but it's practice notes and circulars. Our South African Police Service User Manual Directives in respect of acquisition, the CIDB, Construction Industry Development Board, which governs the construction environment, Joint Building Contracts Committee, Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities, Public Administration Management, Prevention of Organized Crime, Companies Act and Amendments, Safety, Health, Environment, and Quality. Now, we come into procurement delegation. All procurement approvals for quotations between 300,000 and 500,000 are finalized at National Supply Chain Management. This simply means all the divisions and provinces have a delegation to procure goods and services up to the value of 300,000. Above the value of 300,000, it must be submitted to the National Supply Chain Management for approval. Only a brigadier which is attached to procurement or supply chain management, who is appointed in writing, may approve a requirement which is above the value of 300,000. Now, I just want to go deeper. In respect of any requirement which we have a contract in place, a lieutenant colonel and above have unlimited delegation to procure goods and services on existing contracts. Now, provincial and divisional procurement. Provincial and divisional procurement officers have been delegated to finalize all procurement action up to the threshold value of 300,000, like I indicated. Quotation in excess of this threshold value must be forwarded to National Supply Chain Management for approval. Compliance to National Treasury prescripts. The SAP submit a procurement plan for publication, thereafter deviations, expansions, and other feedbacks are submitted quarterly, which is also measured through the MPET and the Department of Performance Management Evaluation. MPET, which means Management Performance Tool. And deviations from quotations above 1 million are reported to National Treasury and AG South Africa. Technological reforms, that is tender portal and central database, central supplier database, which is now at Treasury. The South African Police Service also complies with the legal reforms such as public procurement, which falls under the ambit of the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act, SCM Commercial Contract, which is now transversal contracting as prescribed in respect of the requirements received above the threshold value of 500,000. An open and competitive bidding process must be followed on condition a proper demand in terms of the prescripts is received. I just want to talk about this procurement plan. A procurement plan, it's a document that we submit to National Treasury every year before the end of April, if I'm not mistaken. Now, that will dictate or will indicate what items and services the South African Police Service will procure during that specific financial year. But I think all of us who are aware that the nature of our functions changes from day to day, from hour to hour. I think it is clear to the Honorable Chair and Honorable Members that the South African Police Services is confronted on a daily basis by the happenings around the country. The service delivery protest, the students' protest, and so on. Therefore, we cannot strictly, it will be impossible, or it will be difficult, if not impossible, to strictly adhere to the procurement plan that is submitted to National Treasury. And then, in most cases, we find, for example, the dissatisfaction. I wouldn't like to say queries, dissatisfaction from AG South Africa and Treasury itself. But I think they will appreciate the fact that we are confronted by different situations on a daily basis. In respect of requirements received above the threshold, okay, I've mentioned that. Now we go into the specification and pre-advertisement meetings that are conducted, and all members involved sign the confidentiality certificate as well as the code of conduct and declare the interest, if any. These tenders are advertised in the e-tender portal of National Treasury, the Government Tender Bulletin, and the SAPS website. After the closing date and time of the tender, the tenders will be distributed to an appointed bid evaluation committee for evaluation purposes. Now, we don't have, insofar as the bid evaluation committees are concerned, we don't have a permanent standing committee. Now, members of the bid evaluation committee will change from time to time, for the simple reason that in some of the requirements you will need to have forensic expert, in some of the requirements you'll want to have engineers and so on. So therefore, on that reason, the members of the bid evaluation committee shall be dictated by the requirement in question. Now, in certain cases of emergency and impracticality applications are considered by the SAPS BAC, that is now the Bid Adjudication Committee, in respect of Treasury Regulation 16.4.6.4 to deviate from the process as indicated above. Now, I think, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, you will know that in the past 3 or 4 years, SAPS has, for example, experienced a situation where it becomes impractically impossible to follow a bidding process. I'll give one example. The deployment of members to Vuani. Nobody can predict that on Monday Vuani will be up in flames. In such cases, it would be impossible, for example, to follow a bidding process remember we will have to deploy members from all over South Africa to go to Vuani. Therefore, there is no time to follow this whole bidding process. In this case, that's when our agency delegation shall apply. And then contract management. What does contract management consist of? Manage the distribution of bid documents. Now that is a section, subsection, within supply chain management. Receiving and opening of bids. Liaising with National Treasury in respect of transversal contracts. Now transversal contracts are all those contracts that are put in place by National Treasury. It is not a departmental contract for the South African Police Services, but we are participants in that transversal contract. Now, manages existing contracts in consultation with SAPS legal support in terms of now price increases, ceding of contracts, and payments, interventions on poor contract performance, dispute resolution, or imposing penalties, restrictions by National Treasury. The Department only recommends to National Treasury if a need arises where we need to restrict a supplier or service provider. The South African Police Service or SCM, Supply Chain Management, does not have any delegation whatsoever to blacklist or restrict supplier. That delegation rests with National Treasury. Right, and the next one is the component procurement and contract management participate in a monthly monitoring meeting held between CETA and SAPS, Technology Management Service, to monitor progress and unblock challenges amongst the stakeholders. The SAPS relies on the Department of Public Works to satisfy requirements on all facilities, accommodation, including leases. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I think you are aware of the fact that the National Department of Public Works remains the custodians of all government buildings. Therefore, the South African Police Service is a dependent insofar as the acquiring and leasing of buildings are concerned. But of course, we have a number of, I think, General Matiza, how many facilities have been dissolved? We have 279 police stations that are devolved. In that case, we are able to renovate, maintain, or have a structural change. Only those 274, the rest are non-devolved. Now, the question is, due to this dependency of the department to the National Department of Public Works, sometimes it becomes frustrating for the department because it has to rely on the accuracy or efficiency and the speed with which a National Department of Public Works handles these requirements. Hence these problems with the DPCI buildings and so on. The evaluation criteria of functionality will be utilized in the appointment of future service providers. Due diligence will also be conducted prior to an award of certain capability of service providers. Now I'm coming to risk and risk mitigation. Corruption, a process was implemented whereby a major general at supply chain management oversees the opening and registration of all bids. Now, on the closing date and time of the bid, a major general will be appointed to oversee the opening and the registration of these bid documents. Now the second one, procurement is in the process of, now the procurement section now, not the procurement as a doing with. Now procurement is in the process of, is in the process to finalize the bid evaluation committee locations, that is, you know, office, to be monitored by CCTV cameras with recording capabilities where all bid evaluations will be conducted. Currently, all bid evaluation committees and bid adjudication committees meetings are recorded for good governance and for reference purposes. Procurement and contract management has a risk register in place with mitigation actions against all identified risks. Due diligence are constantly conducted prior to award to ascertain the capability of suppliers. Directors of companies are verified prior to any award against the National Treasury Central Supply Database as well as the Department of Public Service Administration website to establish or determine whether they are state employed. Should it be found that a director is an employee from the state, such as a bidder, in such a case, a bidder will be disqualified from the bidding process. Implementation of a paperless tender, that is, request for quotation system, will be ideal in the near future. We are still busy with that process. Now, communication with provincial and divisional a procurement practitioner. Supply chain management conducts an annual forums whereby deputy provincial commissioners and provincial heads attend. Annual procurement forums whereby procurement officers attend. Circulars concerning procurement policies, amendments, and so on are forwarded to all personnel through the SAP's communication nodal point. Irregular expenditure and procurement process governance management office. Now, a dedicated irregular expenditure office have been designated in the provinces and divisions to streamline and reduce the irregular expenditure. I just want to expatiate on this irregular expenditure. In most cases, it is often found that, Chair and Honorable Members, people misinterpret irregular expenditure as if there is no value for the department. Regular expenditure in most cases, as far as I am concerned, as head of supply chain management, that I have handled so far, it is where, I'll give an example, it is where, for example, a vehicle which a police van had a breakdown or had a mechanical problem on Sunday. Now, there is no one who can give that procurement office a procurement approval to tow that vehicle by the service provider. But what the official is supposed to do is to phone one of the procurement officers, a brigadier or colonel, to give a verbal authority to continue with the service. In such cases, you'll find that this is not done, and therefore that amounts now to irregular expenditure. Sometimes there is a debate, for example, between us, the department, and AG South Africa, to this effect. You were supposed, the minimum number of codes that you are supposed to request from service providers when acquiring goods and services in terms of quotations is 3. But you are allowed to invite as many as you can. But in terms of national treasury prescript, the minimum is 3. Now, you will find that in some services, instead of getting 3 quotations or service providers responding, you had only 2. Now, you end up awarding that service. Now it becomes debatable whether we should have been continuing to invite 3 because we're working against time. Now, sometimes it's viewed as irregular because instead of 3 service providers responding by the due date, you had only 2. Now, AG will say you'll have to restart the whole process, but we're racing against time. So that is some of the challenges. Of course, there are irregular expenditures. For example, if I can give an example, in the built environment, you will find that...
General, I think let's continue with the presentation, because you are raising issues that indicates that line management is not doing their job at stage and cluster level. So we're not going to entertain those excuses. Let's stick to the presentation.
No, thanks, Chair and Honourable Members. And then, let me go to... I was talking to the Dedicated Irregular Expenditure Office, which has been established, manage and conduct irregular inspection at sessions with the provincial and divisional offices. Pocket guides were circulated indicating procurement process to be followed to minimize irregular expenditure. Procurement process governance management office. This office was established to administer all quotations received to ensure that suppliers and SCM practitioners adhere to legislations and prescripts and to eliminate the possibility of collusion between employee and supplier. This office ensures the independent handling of quotations above the 300,000 threshold value. Now, during 2015 and 16 and 16 and 17 financial year, bids awarded 195, previous financial year 128, bids awarded to triple BEE 15-16, 193, 16 and 17, 126, quotations 15 and 16, 2,814, 16 and 17, 2,101. Quotations awarded to triple BEE, 1,814, 16 and 17, 1,048. And then the impact ratings in Boyle financial year, we got four out of four. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. General Skitter?
Chair, just to highlight two aspects here, very important. During your APP process, Honourable Members and Chairperson, in the compilation of the APP, which is built also on the AOPs, the operational plans of divisions and provinces, during that process, priorities are identified by each and every province and division as well. Those priorities then must then also feed into the procurement. And when the procurement plan is compiled, is consolidated from all the inputs around the country and are then submitted to the National Treasury and also monitored and also reported on in a quarterly basis. This is how this report or this procurement plan must then also be embedded in the priority determination of provinces and divisions. Obviously, that is an evolving, progressive process in the sense that people must still enhance that methodology, but it's consolidated from all cost centers around South Africa. That's a very important aspect. And just one thing also to highlight to members, this is a process, or SCM is interwoven with rules, regulations, legislation, as you very well know. But currently the movement is, in the 90s you had the Exchequer Act, and the National Treasury basically put most contracts in place, except for specific aspects which departments would have liked to procure. Then the PFMA came into effect in 1999, and the National Treasury said, procure, based on practice notes and the process which was demand, acquisitioning, logistics, and disposal. Those are your four processes that you find in SCM. Now, with a central supplier database of the chief procurement officer, they are basically again centralizing a number of these aspects, such as commodities that you might find will be utilized by more than one department. Let me use the classical example. We are one of the biggest, if not the biggest, Microsoft user in South Africa. In that process, the National Treasury said, if you look at government, including SAPS, we are now going to negotiate with Microsoft, and a contract was put in place on the central supplier database by the National Treasury. So they don't allow you in certain instances, or you have to motivate actually if you want to go your own way. They consolidate, they utilize the big demand of government, they go to the industry, and of the chief procurement officer goes to the industry, and then either by means of a tender system, whatever, they negotiate a better price for government. I think you're all aware, this is where this whole central supplier database approach is coming from. And in the central supplier database, they are to a large extent then also looking at tax clearance certificates, BEE points, and so forth. That's a very important aspect. Where we had a centralized model in the 90s, which became a decentralized model, so to speak, in the early 2000s, it's again becoming a centralized model in terms of economies of scale, because National Treasury with higher demand can negotiate by means of various mechanisms a better price or that's the philosophy behind it. I just wanted members to have that broad indication also. And that Central Supplier Database, CSD, also has tests in it. And you then participate. For instance, there are a number of commodities where more than one department is actually engaging or utilizing. If it is a specific thing that you might only find in a department such as health or whatever, they will allow you to go out on your specific tender because it's so specific of nature that a lot has got common denominators in it. Thank you, sir.
Right, thank you very much. Now, in this presentation on page 10, you also refer to the building environment. So let's get the building environment presentation immediately, and then we can go into questions. Thank you, General.
Thank you, sir. General Matica, maybe you can do the building environment, and after you've completed the presentation as provided to the honorable members, maybe just indicate the status as requested by the PCOP on Bloemfontein PSS, DPCI, sir, as well as Musenberg, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I will be presenting the facilities environment. On the overview there, I'm just saying I'll be covering the financial executive summary for 16-17 and 17-18. And also under the SAPS Infrastructure Development Programme, I'll be talking to Capital Works, plan maintenance, overview of leases. And there will also be some challenges and inhibiting factors. Chair, I thought it would be proper and necessary for me to also outline the process in terms of construction of a new police station. Quickly, Chair, there are three steps there. We have site clearance. There we refer to site selection, suitability, accessibility and availability. And the estimated period of completion of this phase, Chair, is 12 to 18 months. The second phase there is planning and design. We're talking about procurement for the appointment of consultants and preparation of tender documents. The estimated period of completion of this phase is also 12 to 18 months. The third phase is construction itself, that's execution. We're talking to the procurement of the appointment of the contractor, building of police station, occupation of police station, and the estimated period of completion of this phase is 24 to 36 months. Chairperson and honorable members, we in 2016-17 financial year, for capital works, the allocation was 874 million. We did spend 91% of that particular budget. And I think we'll talk to the issues that have affected the progress of the works. On accommodation charges, this is the money that we paid to DPW, Chairperson. The allocation was 1.2 billion. And we spend 96% of that particular allocation. On municipal services, this is the money that we pay on municipal accounts. The allocation was 1 billion and we spend 99% of that particular budget. On private leases, we had an allocation of 1.3 billion. We spend 99% of that. In total, 98% of the budget was spent. For 17-18 Chairperson, for capital works, we are allocated 890 million. There I've indicated that 678 million is given to DPW for our capital works and plant maintenance projects. As such, we have got 212 million. For accommodation charges, we are allocated 1.3 billion and 1.2 billion is given to NDP, is given to NDPW, and then we only using 92 million. For private leases, we are giving NDPW 1.4 billion for the current leases that I'll talk to the summary at the end of this presentation. And municipal services also, we have given them 1.1 billion. In total, 17-18, the allocation is 4.8 billion under facilities and the built environment check. We're talking to the capital works program for 16-17 and 17-18, Chairperson. Quickly, if I can go through, we have got focus area 1 to focus area 7. Focus area 1, we're talking to police stations, that's your construction, repair and upgrades. Site clearance is the process that I've explained. For 16-17, we targeted 6. We only achieved 1. We had a rollover of 5. But with the processes that we are engaging in now, we thought it should be better for us to have a target in 18-19 because we won't be able to achieve it in 17 and 18. And you will see that there is a 2 projects out of 6 that are not there, which we have moved to the subs building program. We also have a program that runs underneath the APP chairperson. Under planning and design, we have got 8, which we have rolled over, and then it's our target for 17-18, which we are sure is going to be finished in this current financial year. Under execution, chairperson, we have got 6, and we have rolled over 2. As I've explained, the other 2, we have taken them to the building program. Under focus area 2 is victim-friendly facilities. We had a target of 34. We achieved 31. 3 has been taken to the building program because they are completed, but we couldn't report them as completed because of other snag list that is to be completed. Focus area 3 is accessibility for persons with disabilities. We had a target of 23. It was achieved, and for 17-18, we are having a target of 32. Focus area 4 is upgrading of cells. We have a target of 8. We completed 3. We rolled over 5, and then 2 was taken to the building program, and then we targeted to complete 3 in 17-18. Focus area 5 is generators for police stations and high sites. We targeted 16. We achieved 7. We rolled over 9. We added another 9 on top for 17-18, which we are sure that it will be achieved. And high sides have been rolled over also. We'll be achieving those ones. Focus area 6 is air conditioners. We targeted 31 was achieved, and 68 was rolled over. Our target for 17-18 is 62. 6 of the projects would be done, is being done on quotation basis. That's why we did not include it in the target for the APP. Focus area 7 is acquisition of leased police station and land, which is a little bit longer process. We targeted 4, we did not achieve, and we have taken them into the building program, Chair. The next slide talks to the plan maintenance program focus area. We have got 2 focus areas. It's repair and renovations to police stations. Under planning and design, we targeted 7, and then we rolled over 7, which we, according to the progress, will not be able to achieve in this targeted year. Under execution, we had a target of 12. We achieved 8, and we rolled over 4, which is part of the APP, which will be completed in this current financial year. Focus area 2 is maintenance of generators and air conditioners. We had a target of 262. We achieved 246. We rolled over 16. We added 42 on top of that to make it 58. And air conditioners, we had a target of 167. We achieved 167. We put a target of 58 for this current financial year. The next slide talks to the overview on our lease portfolio, Chair. Lease agreements concluded. Active lease contracts that we received from DPW, we have got 838, and lease contracts outstanding from DPW, 68. We have got a total of 906 active lease contracts. Month-to-month leases, we've got 284. Free leases, we've got 28. And the total subs leases is 1,218. We received needs assessment, and which we have processed to DPDW from FSC, railways, and high sites. Chairperson, we did not achieve some of the targets, but the money was used for intervention projects in other areas. We had 6 intervention projects in the Free State, Northwest, Limpopo, Gauteng, Mpumalanga, and Western Cape. In Free State, Phuthatshaba Station, we provided an ablution unit to the tune of 452,000. In Northwest Kolini, we provided 2 open plan offices. Those are park homes to the tune of 1.3 million. Limpopo, we revamped the Thabazimbi Training College completely because it was dilapidated to a tune of 68 million. And then in Gauteng Sandringham, we provided 2 open plan offices to the tune of 1.3 million. In Mpumalanga Masoi, it's a police station. The PCE requested us to intervene. We provided two office blocks, one ablution, one temporary holding cells to the tune of 2.2 million. And Western Cape, Malmesbury, we provided six open plan, one open plan and one ablution facilities to the tune of 5.2 million. In overall, 78 million was used for interventions. But we also had a problem, Chair, in terms of our lease budget, which was overstretched. So we had to find money to deal with the shortfall. So 177 million was also pushed into the leasing budget from the initial earmarked budget. Challenges and the inhibiting factors, we experienced some rain which disturbed some of the projects and we couldn't meet the targets. We also have problems with community unrest when we are implementing our projects. In one of the communities, the contractor was totally chased out and we're still trying to resolve that particular issue. We also had issues of poor performance by appointed service providers. I think the presentation on procurement spoke to the criteria being changed because the way we used to appoint service providers for this project gave us problems indeed. The issue of consultants and contractors not meeting their contractual obligations and timelines also delayed us in terms of achieving some of our projects, but we have come up with a turnaround strategy in that regard. There is also cancellation of contracts by appointed service providers. You appoint, he comes back and say, I'm not going to do the job, so you have to redo the process again, which then takes time. And also the non-responsive bids as per specification, you go out on tender, they just do not quote according to specification. Chair, I think that brings me to the end of the presentation, but I was also requested to quickly give the honorable members of the committee a brief on the issue of DPCI and PSS building and Mizimbek. Chairperson,
colleague, excuse me, before you go on, let me just correct something. On slide number 4, I see there's a typing error. Accommodation charges should be 1294458. There, the first column, allocation, 1294458. That would give you then the 96%. My apologies, that should just be a typing error. That figure that's in there was only for the non-devolved. I've just added the devolved, which then gives you the 96. Thank you, sir. Please continue.
Thank you, General. Chairperson, on the issue of DPCI buildings, we were here on the 8th of March and we were given a mandate with DPW to go back and look at those issues. The first issue was the issue of the landlords who are not maintaining their buildings. What has happened is that letters have been written to those landlords, all of them, requesting them to bring their buildings to compliance level, and we are expecting responses by the 31st of May together with project execution plans of how are they going to carry out their jobs. Those who are not going to comply, it will lead to the termination of their leases. But those leases that are already expiring will not be renewed if the compliance issue has not been addressed. That's the first issue. The second issue, Chairperson, was the issue of the Judge Musa building, Pinnacle building, which I should then report to the committee that a lease has been signed, if I feel its contract has been signed, between the landlord and DPW. The third issue was the issue of the old SARS building in Belleville. After the meeting on the 8th, Chairperson, there was an in-loco inspection conducted by the task team of the old SARS building. And on the 14th of March, DPW appointed a structural engineer to do an assessment of the building. And the report of the structural engineer indicated that the building is sound, there is no threat, it's in good condition. Over and above that, DPW again appointed another structural engineer to give a second opinion, which the company is called ICOM, who were the initial structural engineers when the building was constructed. And their report came back and confirmed the very same
report given by the DPW structural engineer that the building is sound and there is no threat. Therefore, in the interaction, it came out clear that it's because DPCI has got issues with SAPS there. DPCI is occupying first floor, SAPS is occupying second floor, DPCI on the third floor, and SAPS on the fourth floor. So DPCI is raising issues of security concerns. They just don't want to share the building. So what we did was that we will have to get an alternative building for SAPS so that DPCI remain in the building. They occupy it fully themselves. And the process of getting an alternative accommodation for SAPS has commenced, Chair, in that regard. And we are talking about six months to complete the process. That's basically on the issue of DPCI. Chair, on the issue of PSS building in Free State, I should say DPW says they have hit a rock bottom because they have advertised three times they are not getting a suitable building, and now they have to go out on tender for the fourth time. But they will by this time engage different landlords and negotiate to get the suitable building. That's the report that I got from DPW on the PSS building. On the issue of Musingberg, Chair, this project started in 2000 when it was registered on the works control system. Then the consultants were appointed. It was for repair and upgrades. It was for the cell blocks to upgrade them to 5-star. It was for living quarters for the SAPS members. It was also for the new office accommodation for the detective and the new CSC. Those were the three major issues for Musingberg that were supposed to be done. It was there, and then it was only reactivated in 2013 when the province requested that funding be allocated for that project, and then the quantity surveyors were appointed to finalize the planning and design stage. To be honest, Chair, we were supposed to go out on tender on the 27th of October 2017, this year. We have not yet advertised the tender, but planning and design stages will be finalized by the end of July. Then we'll have all the drawings and everything. But with the recent developments, we were told to put it on hold. But the money that has been spent already on consultants amounts to about 8.4 million. That is what has been spent. For this current financial year, 17-18, we didn't allocate money for construction or anything. We only allocated money for the consultants to finalize their work, and I think the allocation was around 148,000, which is left to be paid to the consultants. So we'll wait and await further instruction in terms of what is supposed to be done. But we have not yet advertised the tender. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for those presentations. Maybe just on the third and second last issues, I think we will need more than just an oral report, because our instruction was that public works should come to the committee. And what we hear now about the Bellville office is totally different what DPCI gave testimony in this committee. So we will have to get DPCI back here, as well as SAPS, as well as public works on that issue. The issue of Bloemfontein is really, I think it's, I've got serious questions. If it's still not finalized, public works will have to come here with SAPS. Because it's really, it seems there's something wrong there, seriously wrong. If they can't address a simple issue of procurement of office space for VIP protectors in Bloemfontein. I mean, we had promises of this task team from SAPS and DPI going to sort this out. And we now, towards the end of May, and there's no movement. So really, SAPS, I don't know what is the problem. There is really a problem with your relationship with the DPW. That's my assessment. But we will give other members also an opportunity. So I think we need that presentation, even if we must have that in KZN at the end of June. But we'll have to clarify those issues, because there's no progress. And I mean, the version now of the Bellville office that's now a fight between DPCI and SAPS, that's not what we've heard. We've heard it's not suitable for human consumption. So I mean, the versions is, I really, we need in writing a proper response as well as a proper response in on the screen and in writing. Otherwise, we're not going to make progress. Let's go to the questions then on these two presentations. The first few from my side, and then we'll go to the members. Now, on slide 4, there's an indication that the component of procurement and contract management has got a staff of 102. Can we get an indication of the status today? We don't want to have, you don't have to come back, we want to know today. Are all those officials vetted? And up to what level? We want an indication, because that's where your risk factors come in. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I think there was a SCOPA hearing where they gave feedback on government officials who had contracts with departments they're working in. Of course, there's now new legislation that governs that space. I just want to know, is there any contract at this stage or any risk that was detected by SAPS internally in terms of the current financial year or the past financial year, where SAPS employees have contracts in the SAPS environment? If we can just get that on record. Of course, we will get the AG's report later this year, but let's get that clear commitment. Then the second issue is the issue, and there's a clear recommendation from the Portfolio Committee that all gifts and sponsorships of the last 2 years of SAPS management must be made available to this committee. Now, I want to know, in that environment, is there a gifts register? Is there a register of private sponsorships for any of those employees? We want to get an indication on that. Thank you. Honorable Molobatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I heard you speak of your tenders that are publicized on the website, but my question is, are all tenders publicized, meaning there's no deviation? My second one is, do you have an up-to-date fixed asset register? My next one is, do you have a policy in place that governs the infrastructure development? If you do, how much was spent on infrastructure in this financial year? My next one, how many cases of corruption in the procurement process did you investigate? And what are the success prosecutions during the 2016 and 2017 financial year? I also heard you speak of, tell us about how you do regarding these buildings you were talking of. Do you physically go out to check progress, or do you rely on reports that you get from whoever? Do you physically go there to check the progress? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Onwara Matakane.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And thank you, General, for the presentation. Just a couple of questions. You know, Chair, the Free State. Maybe let me start somewhere. I don't know whether it's appropriate to use the term a derelict of responsibility by management. And here I mean SAPS included. It's not very well or good to use the words that you are solely reliant on public works, because than your robots. I mean, the simple example, if you use a Free State building, and the explanation that we're now getting, and the explanation you got from General Sithole the other day, is a moving target explanation. It's a year later. General Sithole had to fly to go and look for the build, to see the building himself. He got back, he agreed with our report. I don't know, General, Lieutenant General, have you been to that office, to that building? You have seen it. Now, one of the things that we said when we were there, we said those members should be moved from there to be accommodated somewhere else by SAFs. I don't know whether that has been done. It's a year later. So that's why I was asking the question, Chair, whether it is appropriate to use the words of derelict, of responsibility. I mean, what's your responsibility? What have you done? We spoke to the now retired commissioner there, provincial commissioner, Bembe. Before we left, we said, holding arrangement must be found so that VIP should be moved to another office building. I thought he agreed. I thought he said it was a priority. And when you communicate with National, I thought everybody agreed to be a priority. What we are getting here, frankly, is simply unacceptable. Did you really, General, flew from Pretoria to come and tell us this? To come and tell us, somebody says they reach a rock bottom, can't find the place, and you expect those VIP to perform functions. Who amongst the senior managers operate in that environment or will tolerate it for a day, only for a day? So, Chair, I just want to say this is simply unacceptable, totally unacceptable. And I don't know what other action would be required from the committee to make an emphasis to make this point so that management, including Public Works, hear this message and see it. Now, I don't know whether the head of Public Works in Free State, because the last time we told, that building has been awarded, the tender has gone out, awarding has been given to the same building. The same building has been reconfirmed again for another term. I just think, Chair, probably they just said this parliamentarian who came here said something about the building. They don't know what they're talking about. We know what must be done. These people must remain here. Maybe it will be good for them to walk 8th floor from bottom to 8th floor without lift because it's good for their health. Maybe that management has decided on that. Because it has not been simply a plausible explanation of why it is so. So I want to say on this one, and Chair, I don't know, you didn't say what happened to Public Works, because certainly we expected them to be here. And I don't know why they are not here, why their representative are not here to explain this. Because if they avoid to come, you can only give us a conclusion to make. You can conclude on this matter. Because we also live in this country. We know what's happening in this country. We have our ears on the ground. And let me leave that there and say that I think, Chair, this is a matter of agents. I don't know who else you now have to call in the police management. We've spoken to the
general they've given us here. Now we have the lieutenant general. They're telling another story today. Who must we believe, and what is going to be course of action tomorrow? Are you able? Is this within your decision, General Skeeter, to make a decision that while this tender jamboree is taking place, you find alternative place for those officers? They are moved somewhere else. They are able to function somewhere else, not in that building. That building was damned when we were there. Water comes through the walls. It's basically a building that simply has to be just told that it's wrong, it's condemned. But guess what? I'm sure the builder, the owner is getting, every month is getting payment, lease payment. So is that a proper use of resources of the country? Certainly not. Let me leave that chair.
Honorable Ramadlakhani, maybe also to maybe on that issue, because it's a litmus test actually for the structure of SAP. It shows you the regional commissioner system is not working. Because if there is a regional commissioner responsible for that, and there's a PC that must ensure that those members are catered for, it will be dealt with. And what we get now, it's not done. Now that raises the issue of the structure, command and control. We don't want to deal with other issues today. We're going to deal with that in June. But the reality is, there is not performance. So where does the buck stops? And the reality is, the response today on that issue is absolutely not acceptable. Because it seems the regional commissioner, the provincial commissioner, and the program 5 is not taking responsibility for the matter. And General Franklin, where do you stand? So I think it's a serious issue. And unless, because we've been coming with this issue quite some time, so if we say back to basics, we say there's a new approach, this is really not testimony to that. So I don't think we hear any response yet that will satisfy this committee. Honourable Markin.
Still on that issue, I just want to remind ourselves that the day we went there, members of the portfolio committee couldn't go up the stairs, meaning that they didn't participate in what was done there. We were told that one member of the staff there is pregnant, so she had to be given leave because she couldn't go up the stairs. I just imagine if she was doing some essential service there, or even though highly unlikely, I imagine if all the ladies there got pregnant, then it means there's trouble there. Thank you very much.
Maybe just on the same issue, I'll give you opportunity, Honorable Mula, and then Honorable Grunewald.
Thank you, Chairperson. This is frustrating because it's a year now. How can you pay a rent on a building that is not in good condition? I'm a lady. When we went there, we didn't even go there upstairs because the lift was not working. Just imagine, these people are still working on that building. How is this going to take? Because last, when General Stolle was here, he was telling us another story. And today you are telling us another story. It's frustrating. And this is corruption. You can't pay a rent when you see the building is not good. It's corruption. Because how can you pay a person who's not giving you good services? How can you pay him? And the other thing of these DPCI offices and subs offices is the first time that we hear that they are sharing offices. They didn't tell us. What is it that is true, or what is this that is not true? Chairperson, it's frustrating. Let's call them all together here so that they can tell us what is happening. Because if DPW is not doing its job, I don't know what we must do, Chairperson. If services keep on paying, paying rent and paying everybody, what is it that they are gaining from DPW? Because of poor service. Thank you, Chairperson.
For opportunity, Honorable Ramadakani, to continue. Just maybe I saw the hands of Honorable Groenewald and Honorable Bailey on the same issue. Yes.
No, sorry, Chair. No, I thought you were finished with finished there, then come down the line. But I agree with my honorable colleague. It boils down to corruption.
Honorable Bailey on the same issue.
Thanks, Chair. This is going to form one of my questions around bullying environments, but I thought I would just insert it now since we're on that topic. Is I distinctly and clearly remember the shock and the horror of the committee of firsthand witnessing the condition of that building in Bloemfontein. It was absolutely urgent that it be rectified, and we are is it just more than a year now since we've been there. And the fact of a lack of movements is really testament, and assuming that lease is still being honored in terms of monthly payments. This hits directly at the heart of the issue I raised in the budget debate yesterday about are we getting bang for our buck. The money's going out. SAPS reports nearly 100% spending every year when we have the annual reports hearings. But performance on the ground, that impacts on the daily conditions, the occupational conditions of members, as we see, are still being stalled. And Chair, for me, the interesting contrast is that CIRA was also having challenges with procuring office accommodation in Bloemfontein. It seems there are some structural issues in that city around very few prospective suppliers who can meet a certain scale of demand and that sort of thing. But CIRA just broke up their contracts. They couldn't find somebody who could meet the tender specs for a particular square meterage and that sort of thing. So they just broke it up into two smaller contracts. And I'm surprised that SAPS has not been able to explore that kind of innovation or adaptation. It's a desperately urgent situation, and it needs to be addressed as soon as possible by whatever means within parameters. So we really must get some movement on this. And Chair, if I could just insert a quick question as part of this round on this issue. Okay, then I will leave my question for later.
Honorable Ramzakani, you're welcome to go ahead with your other questions. Thank
you. So no, thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I was moving on to the next question, but I realized that I didn't finish on this Free State matter. I don't know whether we need to see anybody here, frankly. I'm saying I don't know whether we need to see anybody for the third explanation, to give us another explanation correcting the one that we've heard today. I think, Chair, what we should say as a committee, we should reaffirm our resolution on this matter that we have said a year ago that those VIP protection unit must be moved from that office, put somewhere else while there is a battle with the property owners in Free State to get a suitable office. The report we need to get, I think we should say reasonably within 7 days should get that report, is that they have been moved to a proper office where they are able to perform their function. Failing which, we should be making recommendation of consequences. If there is a derelict of duty, there should be some consequences. We should recommend
that somebody who's responsible to this thing must be fired. Let's get the boot. Because it's not doing what it's supposed to do. And now we're talking to the senior management of police here. You see, the issue about public works. Public works can't give you a building just because it's public works that is in that state and you have to accept it. You are a client. Public works is a department of government. So they can't. That's the language that you're using here. It's a slippery language because you want to shift the responsibility somewhere else in the case of something like this happen. So I don't think, my view on this issue is that we don't want to see somebody else to come and explain this. We want action to be taken in line with the recommendation that we made a year ago. It must be implemented, failing which there should be consequences on this matter. Managers who are not able to do this thing must get the boot. They are not able to do it. I mean, this is a senior management that is able to make decisions. It's a phone call decision.
I don't know what that is. And then we're going to go through the other members and then SAPS will have an opportunity to respond.
Very prominent issue that we're discussing now and that
no, we'll give you an opportunity.
It takes on a separate discussion.
No, we'll give you an opportunity when we come back. Yes, Honourable Ramana Khan, you can go ahead.
Unless General will say I'm out of order, then you can do that. But if
I don't know whether I've got that.
No, your finger showed indicated to me that I'm out of order. You are not taking this comment.
Let's continue with the questions. We'll give SAPS enough time to respond. Yes.
Okay, then Khayelitsha Musenberg story. I'm glad to hear that we start with the positive. I'm glad to hear that you said you have not yet awarded a tender to anybody, and therefore the decision about, because, and I wanted to ask you, in terms of your needs, tabulation of your needs, in terms of annual needs, assessment and requirements, do you mean that you did not get anything from Khayelitsha, from the Western Cape, that showed you that the crime generator stations that requires infrastructure include the greater Khayelitsha Nyanga Philippi area, and therefore the infrastructure is important. You didn't get any kind of needs that come from the Khayelitsha. If you did, how did then they not get the high priority? And you said this Musenberg was decided in 2000. The year 2000, it was agreed that it should be on the priority list on the year 2000. I don't remember it, the year 2000. And because I remember that in the year 2000, the approach was dealing with the 27 area where the crime was most generated from. And Khayelitsha was one of them. And that station in Makassar was one of them. That was a part of our priority. Unless it shift when it from the province to national, then it shift. So did you not get anything from General Jula here in terms of the Khayelitsha, Makassar, Philippi, Greater Philippi area as an area that requires a priority, high priority? The preferential targets in terms of the SAPS, are you meeting those targets? I know you've listed the number of so many has been awarded tenders or contract has been awarded to BE, but it doesn't explain the quantum and the value. What is the value of it in terms of it? Whether you're meeting it or just a simple, small part of a whatever contract it is, adjacent to a big one, and the value that is far apart. Then the the IFMS, are you implementing the financial model? Has the Treasury asked you to implement that financial model? I'm talking about integrated financial management system. Are you SAPS already implementing that model already? Chair, I leave the others to other members. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think much is left for the others, but thank you. Chairperson, I might got some time. I've got three short questions. Firstly, on your slide 9, on your focus area, on generators, I just want to know, how many police stations at present do not have any generators? Because it's quite important. The second one, Chairperson, is that, where's that slide again? But it is a slide that's dealing, here it is, that when it comes to municipal services, I see that SAPs are paying a 5% sort of commission that services are paid. Why do we have this arrangement? And then I want to know, can we say today that all municipal services accounts are fully paid up? And then my last question is then, on your challenges, you've mentioned the community unrest. I don't understand that quite clearly. Which community are we talking about, that they want to prevent building a police station or what? Doesn't make sense to me. Short and sweet. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mark.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one clarification. On the Muizenberg. I don't know whether I heard correctly. The general said upgrading of cells to 5-star. I understand the cell as in that thing where you put criminals in. So I can't connect it with 5-star. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. Does the Auditor General report any irregularities or weaknesses in the SCM system? My second question, has the department reported on all large tender of capital projects on public-private partnership deals? Focus should be placed on time frames of social infrastructure development projects, as overruns in time leads to costly budget escalations. My third question, do all members of SAPS BITS committee have security clearance, and how are the committees constituted? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Mabidi. Honourable Bailey. Thank you, Chair. Can I just check, do you think we'll have enough time for two rounds before we move on to the other presenters, or should I get all my questions in now? All of them now. Okay, because I was going to hold back my building environments and facilities management questions for the second round, but I'll just throw the whole bunch in then, Chair. My first question, Chair, is in relation to the supply chain management environment linked to a recent issue that got some public attention and media spotlights, because it links to this, which was the issue of the allocation of Presidential Protection Service resources to the former AU chairperson. How would that, and how has that affected the demand management that would be central to supply chain management, because it's obviously an unplanned and
unforeseen developments. And so would that require deviations, or has that required deviations, as the general clarified, is sometimes made provision for? Because the key issue there is around expenditure of public resources. And linked to that was also the issue that came up in the Sunday media about the allegation of the Northern Cape Police Commissioner improperly using the SAPS helicopter, the one helicopter the province has, going to Wimpy and KFC and a jacket being fetched for him and that sort of thing. So first question, I would have liked to pose that to the acting commissioner because he's the appropriate line manager, but any feedback we can get now, if that has been followed up, and then in general, what's the procedure and protocol around that sort of thing? Because the way it's been presented and framed does seem very improper and irregular and a misuse of very limited resources. My next question, Chair, still around supply chain management, is on slide 14, with the first presentation, the General mentioned, it's not in the text, but he mentioned that there were 279 devolved SAPS stations where SAPS is wholly responsible for the procurement needs around that. I'm just curious to know, what are the criteria for designating a station to be devolved? What are the criteria of how that is determined? Because it would seem to me that given the difficulties SAPS and I imagine other departments are having in their interactions with DPW as clients of public works, the ideal in theory would be to devolve as many SAPS stations as possible so we don't have to encounter those bottlenecks and those problems. So just an understanding of how that devolution comes about and the prospects for expanding the scope of that, because that might then be the way to go. On the last slide we had in that presentation, I would have very much liked to get a much more detailed breakdown. I think Honorable Khuna was speaking about this, a breakdown of these figures we have around bids. So just three questions in that regard. It's slide 18 of that first presentation. As firstly, just to clarify, are these figures talking about all contracts, including the ones that are DPW related? So is this also bids where DPW has done the actual contracting with the service provider and then SAPS just as the client reimburses DPW, where this all just directs SAPS contracts? Secondly, I'm just curious to know why there seems to have been a decline in the number of contracts from 195 to 128. That's the global figure. Just an explanation as to whether are there certain services that were no longer required? Was there a consolidation of some contracts so that there's bigger contracts going to fewer suppliers? Just an understanding of that, because I would like to think that on the whole, there's a fairly stable sort of demand equation around at least some of the services and assets that SAPS needs. And then the third question, as part of just getting more detailed information, is I'd like to find out where are the bulk of these contracts being awarded in terms of that three-tier framework of contracts that are below 300,000, between 300K and 500K, and above half a million. Just where does the bulk of that go? Because I think that might shed some light on some of the questions that keep swirling around and that we had even around the other discussion of the VIP building in Bloemfontein, where, if the bulk are happening below 300K, where approval can happen at divisional and provincial level, then it would indicate that perhaps the problem is around provincial and divisional management of contracts, and that maybe we shouldn't be coming down so hard on General Skitter and the national SCM team. But we just need to be able to locate where is the problem and the mismanagement and the lack of compliance monitoring and ensuring accountability with contractors. And then, Chair, if I may move on to the building environments and facilities management, some of these figures really gave me a fright in terms of what they indicate has been performance trends. You know, firstly, on slide 3, if my calculations were correct, what this says around the process from start to finish of a police station is it says that it would take 4 to 6 years, basically, for a police station to be built, assuming that there aren't any time overruns, and that's going to be the next point I come to, at least 4 to 6 years. So what that says is that either SAPS must have had an early warning system of, you know, forecasting trends around needs for a police station, population growth, et cetera, so that they can kick in this process early enough that by the time the demands and the crisis is escalating, the ability to meet that it has already kicked in and we can at least mitigate that. But if, for example, this process only kicks in once you've had 2 years of community complaints, protests, rising crime because the police station is struggling to deal with the situation, and we must still wait 4 to 6 more years, that's a very, very big problem. And I'd like to know, or at least have a refresher, if it's been mentioned before, what the process around managing all of that. And I really think that time frame needs to be cut down, Chair. I mean, it can't take 6 years to build a police station, given what a crucial service policing is, and the risk we know of time overruns. And then on slides 8 and 9, still on the building environment presentation, these were the figures that really really frightened me, because most of these focus areas show significant rollovers from the previous financial year to the upcoming period. Six out of six execution stage projects for police stations were rolled over from last year, from the past financial year to this year. That means six police stations that should have been finished operating brick-and-mortar facilities are not there, and therefore the needs that those police stations would have been starting to meet and the issues they would have been alleviating has now been postponed for another year. That's a big, big problem. Majority of cell upgrading not happening. It just keeps going. So many rollovers. And the particular question this raises for me, Chair, is the issue I raised in the last round of discussions, is that I'm still baffled by how we get the annual financial reporting from SAPS of nearly 100% expenditure when we have, as a micro example, these kinds of deviations or these kind of rollovers, because then it raises the questions, what happened to the money that was allocated to fulfill these APP targets? Either there wasn't money allocated in the first place, and therefore the rollover doesn't have any implications for the budget, in which case, why was it in the APP if it's not budgeted for? Or if there was alignment between the APP targets and the budget, that means there's been significant deviations. Requirements and adjustments that happened during the financial year to compensate for the fact that that money is not going to be spent where it was intended to go. So, you know, what happened to that money that was allocated? And then my last two, Chairperson, is I'm a bit concerned in terms of this issue about, I think it's the Belleville office of the Hawks, where we've now heard this other issue about a conflict between SAPS and Hawks. not wanting to share. But a particular detail mentioned by the general that kind of pricked my ears is he said that the structural engineer, I think I heard the name ICOM, was the original assessing structural engineer in the awarding of the contracts, and they were also the givers of the second opinion in the reassessments. Chair, the first thing that would come to me if I was sitting in that discussion within the SAPS would be there's a clear risk of a conflict of interest by using this person. They don't want to look bad. They were the ones who gave the first opinion saying that use the building is fine. So if you ask them to reassess their own work, of course they're going to be at least biased to give a favorable reassessment. So there was an issue with not thinking through who you choose and who you select to do that. You must find a completely independent opinion. You know, if I have a surgery, if I go for surgery and there's, you know, some sort of surgical problem, and there's now a medical negligence suit and you get a second opinion from other doctors' opinions, you don't go to the surgeon who's been accused of having been negligent or done the wrong procedure to then assess whether their own work was up to standard. It just doesn't make sense. And then finally, Chair, on the Muizenberg police station, I mean, this thing was started in 2000, we're told. It's now 17 years later. Again, just those time frames are just unimaginable. It's taking way too long. And we hear that there's been 8.4 million spent so far on consultants. I just have a question as to who were these consultants and what were they doing that there's been almost 8.5 million spent? Well, there will be 8.5 by the end of this year. But there's no physical, tangible outcome of that. I mean, that's 8 million rand that's just been spent, but it's just consultants. What were they doing? Who were they? Is it architects? Is it, and then finally, Chair, just to springboard from Honourable Ramatlakane's question about what inputs has gone into this process so far. Is the General able to, if you have the information, to tell us whether every year the Western Cape Department of Community Safety runs a policing need and priorities process? And I know the SAPS takes part in those cluster convenings, and a report is compiled. Does that PNP, does that policing needs and priorities reports from the Western Cape or even other provinces if they do it, does that feed into all of these processes resulting in the procurement plan, resulting in particular Muizenberg? Because if the whole Muizenberg saga has not taken into account the PNP process and the identified need and priorities there, that's exactly the problem, is that we're either operating on a completely uninformed basis and ignoring valuable input that's coming from the ground and from stakeholders, or there's a problematic mismanagement once things kick off. Thanks, Chair.
Right, before we break for tea and to get the responses, because remember we must still deal with Paul Matt and also our guests from Popkun and Sapu must also get the opportunity. Final one from my side. Now, in the ENE document that was presented in the Red Book, not Red anymore, there's the proposal of 62 police stations. Now, I want to get an indication. What percentage of those 62 police stations is in former disadvantaged areas? Because otherwise, the Muizenberg-Khayelitsha debate will come up next year. So how many of that 62? And then in terms of prioritization to core business, to give you an example, I mean, the members represent various constituencies. In a lot of the areas, there's problems with space, etc., etc. For example, in my constituency in Wellington, there's senior police persons who's already for 10 years in Wendy houses. Now, a couple of weeks ago, there was a tender published by SAPS for a new head office in the Western Cape, 900 million, almost a billion rand, for a provincial head office. Now, my question is, and I need a response from SAPS, if we say our core business is back to basic service delivery at the station level, shouldn't we make a choice, a value choice, that the maximum of spend should be at the face, coal face level, and not at the HQ level? I just want to get a response, because if we say a tender of R1 billion for one provincial police station, what can we do with R1 billion in ensuring that police stations in the rural and deep rural areas are addressed? I just want to get a response from SAPS. So members, 10 minutes and we'll come back. 10 minutes tea break. Thank you.